Havoc! And the crowd parted enough that Kol could see Havoc standing up on his hind legs, his paws against Aaron's chest. Aaron was grinning and running his hands through Havoc's ruff. The hubbub among the guests increased. People were babbling in alarm, some of them practically yelling.
"Oh, no,"
Tamara said, biting her lip.
"What is it?"
Kol had already started forward, eager to get to Aaron. Tamara caught his wrist.
"Havoc's a chaos-ridden wolf, Kol, and he's climbing all over their Makar. Come on!"
Tamara tugged him forward, and indeed it was a lot easier for Kol to make his way through the crowd, with Tamara steering him like a tugboat. Guests were screaming and running in the other direction. Tamara and Kol arrived at Aaron just as two very elegant adults, looking worried, also reached him. A handsome man in an ice-white suit and a beautiful, severe-looking woman with long, dark hair, studded with flowers. Her shoes had clearly been made by a metal mage. They looked as if they'd been cast of silver, and they rang like bells when she walked. Kol couldn't even imagine how much they'd cost.
"Get off!"
snapped the man, shoving at Havoc, which was kind of a brave thing to do, Kol thought, even though the only thing Aaron was in real danger of was being licked to death.
"Dad? Mom?"
Tamara managed, out of breath.
"Remember I told you about Havoc? He's fine. He's safe. He's like our mascot."
Her father looked at her as though she had explained no such thing, but her interruption gave Aaron time to squat down and grab hold of Havoc's collar. He sank his fingers into the wolf's fur, rubbing his ears. Havoc's tongue lolled out of his mouth with pleasure.
"It's amazing how he responds to you, Aaron. He becomes positively tame,"
Tamara's mother said, beaming at Aaron. The rest of the party had started oohing and clapping as though Aaron had performed some miracle, as though Havoc, behaving normally, was a sign that their Makar would triumph over the forces of the chaos-ridden. Kol, standing behind Tamara, felt invisible and annoyed about it. No one cared that Havoc was his dog and had spent the summer being perfectly tame for him. No one cared that he and Havoc had gone to the park every Friday for the past 2 months and played frisbee until Havoc accidentally bit the frisbee in half, or that once Havoc had licked a little girl's ice cream cone gently instead of biting off her whole hand the way he would have if Kol hadn't told him not to, which was definitely a point for him because an evil overlord would never have done that. No one cared unless Aaron was involved. Perfect Aaron, in an even crisper suit than the one Jasper was wearing, and a new, stupid-looking haircut that meant his hair was falling into his eyes. Kol noted with some satisfaction that there were dirty paw prints near one of the fancy jacket pockets. Kol knew he shouldn't feel the way he did. Aaron was his friend. Aaron didn't have any family, not even a father who was trying to kill him. It was good that people liked Aaron. It meant that Havoc got to stay at the party and that someone would probably lend Kol $30 without much fuss. When Aaron grinned at Kol, his whole face lighting up, Kol forced himself to smile back.
"Why don't you find your friend some party clothes?"
Tamara's mother said, with an amused nod at Kol. "And, Stebbins, do go pay for the taxi he came in. It's been idling by the gate for ages now." She smiled at Kol. He wasn't sure what to make of her. She seemed friendly and warm, but Kol thought there was something about her friendliness that wasn't quite real.
"But hurry back. The glamours start soon."
Aaron shooed Havoc toward the house.
"Kol can borrow some of my clothes," he said.
"Yeah, come tell us what happened," Tamara said, leading the way. "Not that we're not happy to see you, but what are you doing here? Why didn't you call to say you were coming?"
"Is it because of your dad?"
Aaron asked, giving him a sympathetic look.
"Yeah," Kol said slowly.
They walked through the huge glass doors and through a marble-tiled room filled with rich, jewel-colored rugs. As they climbed up a ridiculous, marvelous ironwork staircase, Cole spun out a story about how Alistair had forbidden him to go back to the Magisterium. That part was true enough. Tamara and Aaron knew Alistair had always hated the idea of Cole going to mage school. It was possible to embroider it, until it became the reason they'd had a big fight, and even the reason that Cole had been afraid his father was going to lock him up in the basement and keep him there. He added that Alistair hated havoc and was mean to him for extra sympathy. By the time he was done, Cole had almost convinced himself it was true. It seemed like a way more believable story than the truth. Tamara and Aaron made all the right sympathetic noises and asked dozens of questions so that he was almost relieved when Tamara left so Cole could change. She took Havoc with her. Cole followed Aaron into the room where he was staying and flopped down on the giant king-size bed in the center. The walls were covered with expensive-looking antique objects that Cole suspected Alistair would have killed to get his hands on. Big, carved metal plates, tiles painted with angular patterns, and framed scraps of bright silk and metal. There were grand windows looking down onto the lawns below. Above the bed was a chandelier dangling blue crystals in the shape of bells.
"This is some place, huh?"
Aaron said, clearly still a bit dazed by it himself. He went over to the imposing wooden wardrobe in the corner and swung it open. He pulled out white pants, a jacket, and a shirt, and brought them over to Cole.
"What?"
he said self-consciously, when Cole didn't move to take them from him. Cole realized he'd been staring.
"You didn't mention that you were staying at Tamara's house," he said.
Aaron shrugged.
"It's weird." "That doesn't mean it has to be a secret."
"It wasn't a secret," said Aaron hotly. "There was just never a time to bring it up."
"You don't even look like you,"
Cole said, taking the clothes.
"What do you mean?"
Aaron sounded surprised, but Cole didn't see how he could be. Cole had never seen him in any clothes as fancy as the ones he was wearing now, not even when he'd been declared the Makar in front of the whole Magisterium in the Assembly. His new shoes probably cost hundreds of dollars. He was tan and healthy. He smelled like aftershave, despite not needing to shave. He'd probably spent the whole summer running around outside with Tamara and eating really balanced meals. No pizza dinners for the Makar.
"Do you mean the clothes?"
Aaron tugged at them self-consciously.
"Tamara's parents insisted I take them. And I felt really weird wandering around here in jeans and t-shirts when everyone else always looks so...
rich," said Cole.
"Well, at least you didn't show up in your pajamas."
Aaron grinned.
"You always know how to make an entrance," he said.
Cole figured he was thinking of when they'd met at the Iron Trial and Cole had exploded a pen all over himself. Cole took the new clothes and went into the bathroom to change. They were, as he had suspected they would be, too big. Aaron had a lot more muscles than he did. He settled for rolling the sleeves of his jacket up practically to his elbows and running wet fingers through his hair until it was no longer standing up in crazy spikes. When he came back into the bedroom, Aaron was standing near the windows, looking down at the lawn. There was a big fountain in the middle of the grass, and some children had gathered around it, throwing in handfuls of some kind of substance that made the water flare up in different colors.
"So you like it here?"
Cole asked, doing his best not to sound resentful. It wasn't Aaron's fault he was the Makar.
None of it was Aaron's fault.
Aaron pushed some of his blonde hair out of his face. The black stone in the band on his wrist, the one that signified that Aaron could work chaos magic, glittered.
"I know I wouldn't be here if I wasn't the Makar," he said, almost as if he knew what Cole had been thinking. "Tamara's parents are nice, really nice,
but I know it wouldn't be like this if I was just Aaron Stewart from some foster home. It's good for them, politically, to be close to the Makar, even if he is only 13. They said I could stay as long as I liked.
Cole felt his resentment starting to trickle away. He wondered how long Aaron had waited to hear that he could stay somewhere as long as he liked. He thought it probably had been a long time.
Tamara's your friend, he said, and not because of politics or who you are. She was your friend before anyone knew you were the Makar.
Aaron flashed a smile. And you were too.
I thought you were okay,
Cole conceded, and Aaron smiled again.
It's just that being the Makar at school meant one thing, he said. But this summer? It's been doing tricks and going to parties like this one, being introduced to lots of people and everyone being really impressed to meet me and treating me like I'm special. It's fun. He swallowed. I know I really didn't want to be the Makar when I found out, but I can't help feeling like my life could be pretty great. I mean, if it wasn't for the enemy. Is it bad that I feel that way?
His eyes searched Cole's face.
I can't ask anyone else but you. No one else would give me a straight answer.
And just like that, Cole's resentment dissolved. He remembered Aaron sitting on the couch in their room at school, still white-faced and shocked from being dragged up in front of the whole magisterium so the masters could announce that he was the one great hope who would lead them all against the enemy. There was an enemy. Cole knew now. It just wasn't who they thought it was. And there were people who wanted Aaron dead. They wouldn't stop unless the enemy told them to stop. If Cole was the enemy, well, then Aaron was safe. Right? If Master Joseph needed Cole to mount an attack, then Master Joseph was out of luck. Cole would never do anything to hurt his friends, because he had friends, and that was definitely not something that evil overlords had. Was it? Abruptly, he thought of his father slumped unconscious on the floor. He would never have thought he'd do anything to hurt his father, either.
It's not bad to think being the Makar is fun, Cole said finally. You should have fun, so long as you don't forget that if it wasn't for the enemy is a pretty big if.
I know, Aaron said softly.
And as long as you don't get conceited. But you don't have to worry about that because you've got me and Tamara to remind you that you're still the same loser you were before.
Aaron gave a crooked smile.
Thanks.
Cole wasn't sure if Aaron was being sarcastic or sincere. He opened his mouth to clarify when Tamara yanked open the door and glowered at them.
Are you guys done? Honestly, Cole, how long does it take to get dressed?
We're ready, Aaron said, coming away from the window.
Outside, Cole could see magic sparking over the lawn. Chapter 4 Cole understood why neighbor kids would want to sneak into the party. When he came back through the doors with Aaron, Tamara, and a freshly brushed Havoc on a new leash, he took in the full scope of the event and was amazed. Cloth-covered tables were heaped with platters of food, tiny chicken sausages and pastry, fruit cut into the shapes of moons and stars and suns, salads of herbs and pickled tomatoes, blocks of gooey cheese and crackers, popcorn shrimp on tiny skewers, blackened scallops, seared tuna, gelatin molds with chunks of meat suspended in them, and chilled tins of tiny black beads resting in bowls of ice that Cole thought was probably caviar. Lion-size ice sculptures of manticores flapped crystalline wings that sent a cooling breeze into the air. Ice frogs leaped from table to table, and ice pirate ships soared into the sky before running aground on ice rocks. At a central table,
An ice fountain ran with red punch instead of water. Four ice peacocks perched on the edges of the sculpture, using sparkling claws to ladle the drink into ice cups for passing guests. Beside the banquet stood a line of topiaries trimmed into tidy shapes. Flowers, symbols, patterns, and letters. Bright flowers ringed each trunk, but the brightest sight of all was an arched folly with a waterfall of liquid fire. It flamed and sparked onto the grass, where barefoot girls in party frocks ran back and forth, putting their hands into the sparks, which ran up and down their skin without seeming to burn them. As if to drive home the point, a painted sign hung in the air above the waterfall. It read, "Children, please play with the fire." Cole kind of wanted to run back and forth in it too, but he wasn't sure if he was allowed or if it was just for little kids. Havoc nosed in the grass for dropped bits of food. Tamara had tied a pink bow around his neck. Cole wondered if Havoc felt humiliated. He didn't seem to be.
"You've been going to parties like this all summer?"
Cole asked Aaron. Aaron looked a little uncomfortable.
"Pretty much."
"I've been going to parties like this all my life," Tamara said, dragging them along. "They're just parties. They get boring fast. Now come on, the glamours are actually cool. You don't want to miss them."
They went past the topiaries and the fire waterfall, past the tables and the clumps of partygoers to a wide stretch of lawn where a small group had gathered. Cole could tell they were mages, not just by the subtle bands that glittered on their wrists, but also from their air of confidence and power.
"What's going to happen?" Cole asked.
Tamara grinned.
"The mages are going to show off."
As if he'd heard her, one of the mages, a compactly built man with light brown skin, raised his hand. The area around the mages started to crowd as Mr. and Mrs. Rajavi called over the rest of the partygoers.
"That's Master Cameron,"
Tamara whispered, looking at the mage, whose hand had begun to glow.
"He teaches at the Collegium. He does the best tricks with—"
Suddenly, a wave rose from the mage's hand. It was as if the grass were the sea, instead, goaded into producing a tidal wave. It grew and grew and grew until it towered above them, shadowing the party, large enough to crush the house and flood the grounds. Cole sucked in a breath. The air smelled of brine. Inside the wave, he could see things moving, eels and sharks snapping their jaws. Salt spray splashed Cole's face as the whole thing crashed down and disappeared. Everyone burst into applause. Cole would have clapped too if he hadn't been holding Havoc's leash in one hand. Havoc was whining and nosing his fur. He hated being wet.
"Water,"
Tamara finished with a laugh.
"Once, when it was really hot, he came over and made a massive sprinkler right next to the pool. We all ran through it, even Kimaya."
"What do you mean, even Kimaya?"
came a teasing voice.
"I like water as much as anyone else."
Tamara's older sister, wearing a silver dress and sandals, had come up behind them. Holding her hand was Alex Strike, who was heading into his fourth year at the Magisterium and was Master Rufus's frequent assistant. He was dressed down in jeans and a t-shirt, with a bronze band at his wrist, since he hadn't gotten his silver one yet. He grinned at Cole.
"Hey, Squirt," he said.
Cole smiled a little awkwardly. Alex had always been nice to him, but he hadn't known Alex was dating Tamara's older sister. Kimaya was really pretty and popular, and Cole always felt as if he were about to fall over or set himself on fire when he was around her. It made sense that two popular people were together, but it also made him more conscious of a lot of other things. His limp, his messy hair, the fact he was standing there in Aaron's borrowed clothes. Master Cameron finished his display with a flourish, sparkling droplets that shot out toward the guests. Everyone squealed, anticipating getting wet, but the water evaporated a few feet above the heads of the crowd, turning into wisps of colored vapor. Mr. and Mrs. Rajavi led the applause as another mage stepped forward, this one a tall woman with a magnificent crown of silver hair. Cole recognized her as the woman who had brushed past him imperiously on the front steps.
"Anastasia Tarquin," said Tamara in a whisper. "She's Alex's stepmother."
"That she is," Alex confirmed.
His expression, as he watched her, was neutral. Cole wondered if he liked her. When Cole had been younger, he'd wished his dad would get married again, so he could have a stepmother. It seemed better than no mother at all. Only when he was older had he stopped to wonder what would have happened if his dad had married someone he didn't like. Anastasia Tarquin raised both hands imperiously, holding thin metal rods in each. When she let them go, they lined themselves up in the air in front of her. She twitched her fingers, and one of them vibrated, sending out a single, perfect note of music. Cole jumped in surprise. Alex looked over at him.
"Cool, huh? When you master metal, you'll be able to get it to vibrate to whatever frequency you want."
The other metal rods were trembling now, each one of them like a different guitar string being plucked, sending out a torrent of music. Cole liked music as much as the next person, but he'd never really thought about it before, about how alchemical magic could be used not just to build up and defend, or to attack and battle, but to make art. The music was like rain breaking through the humid air. It made him think of waterfalls and snow and ice floes far out in the ocean. When the last note of the music died away, the metal rods dropped, falling to the earth and melting into it like rainwater sinking into mud. Mrs. Tarquin bowed and stepped back amid a shower of applause. As she moved away, she winked in Alex's direction. Maybe they got along after all.
"And now," said Mr. Rajavi, "perhaps our very own Makar, Aaron Stewart, would favor us with a demonstration of chaos magic."
Cole felt Aaron stiffen beside him as everyone clapped enthusiastically. Tamara turned and patted Aaron on the shoulder. He looked at her for a second, biting his lip, before he straightened up and made his way to the center of the mage's circle.
He looked very small there, doing tricks and going to parties.
That's what Aaron had told Cole, but Cole hadn't thought he'd meant actual tricks. Cole had no idea what a chaos mage could do that was pretty or artistic. He remembered the rolling, devouring darkness the other chaos-ridden wolves had disappeared into, remembered the chaos elemental pocked with wide, wet mouths, and shuddered with a feeling that was part dread and part anticipation. Aaron lifted his hands, fingers spread wide. Darkness rolled in. A hush spread over the party as more people joined the crowd, staring at their Makar and the growing shadows around him. Chaos magic came from the void, came from nothing. It was creation and destruction all rolled into one, and Aaron commanded it. For a moment, even Cole was a little afraid of him. The shadows congealed into the twin shapes of two chaos elementals. They were thin, sleek creatures that resembled whippets made entirely of darkness, smaller than the one in Master Joseph's lair had been. Still, their eyes glittered with the madness of the void. Gasps went up all around the party. Tamara clutched Cole's arm. For his part, Cole gaped. This didn't seem like a trick. Those things seemed dangerous. They were regarding the crowd as though they'd like nothing better than to devour everyone watching and pick their teeth with the bones of the people over by the food. They began to slip sinuously over the grass.
Okay, Aaron, Call thought. Dismiss them. De-summon them. Do something.
Aaron lifted his hand. Threads of darkness began to spiral out from his fingers. His brow was furrowed in concentration. He reached out. Havoc began to bark wildly, startling Call and Aaron both. Call saw the moment that Aaron's concentration got away from him, the shadows vanishing from his fingertips. Whatever he'd been meaning to do didn't happen. Instead, one of the Chaos Elementals sprang into the air toward Tamara's mother. Her eyes went wide, her mouth opening in astonished terror. Her hand flew out, fire igniting in the center of her palm. Aaron fell to his knees, flinging out both hands. Darkness exploded outward, surrounding the elemental. The creature disappeared along with its twin. The Chaos Elementals were gone, scattered into shadows that melted away into the sunshine. Call became conscious of the fact that it was a summer day again. A summer day at a fancy garden party. He wasn't sure if there'd ever been any real danger. Everyone began laughing and clapping. Even Mrs. Rajavi looked delighted. Aaron was breathing hard. His face looked pale, with a hectic flush on his cheeks, as though from illness. He didn't look like someone who'd just done a trick. He looked like someone who'd almost gotten his friend's mother eaten. Call turned to Tamara.
What was that?
Her eyes sparkled.
What do you mean? He did a great job. He could have been killed.
Call hissed at her, stopping himself from adding that her mom could probably have been killed too. Aaron was on his feet now, pushing his way through the crowd toward them. He wasn't making very fast progress, since everyone seemed to want to move closer to touch him, and congratulate him, and pat him on the back. Tamara scoffed.
It was just a party trick, Call. All the other mages were standing by. They would have interfered if anything had gone wrong.
Call could taste coppery anger in the back of his throat. He knew. And Tamara knew, too, that mages weren't infallible. They didn't always interfere to stop things in time. No one had interfered to stop Constantine Madden when he'd pushed his chaos magic so far that it had killed his brother and nearly destroyed the Magisterium. He'd been so injured and scarred by what had happened that he'd always worn a silver mask afterward to cover his face. He must have hated how he looked. Call put up his hand to touch the uninjured skin of his own face, just as Aaron got to them, flushed and wild-eyed.
"Can we go sit down somewhere?" he said,
quietly enough for his words not to reach the crowd.
"I need to catch my breath."
"Sure." Call scrambled to position himself a little in front of Aaron as he leaned down to Havoc.
"Pull me over to the fountain,"
he told the wolf in a whisper, and Havoc yanked him forward. The crowd parted hastily to let Havoc by, and Call, Tamara, and Aaron followed in his wake. Call was aware of Alex looking after them sympathetically, though Kimaya had already turned her attention to the next mage's trick. Colored sparks rose in the air behind them as they rounded a hedge shaped like a shield, and discovered a fountain. This one was round, made of yellow stone, and had an aged look that made Call think it must have been brought from somewhere else. Aaron sat down on the lip of it, scrubbing his hands through his wavy blonde hair.
"I hate my haircut," he said.
"It looks fine," said Call.
"You don't really think that," said Aaron.
"Not really," Call said, and gave Aaron what he hoped was a supportive smile. Aaron looked worried. Maybe it hadn't been that supportive.
"You okay?"
Aaron took a deep breath.
"I just..."
"Have you heard?"
An adult voice floated through the air, through the leaves. It was deep and bass. Call had heard it before.
Someone broke into the Collegium last week. They tried to steal the Alkahest.
Call and Aaron stared at each other and then at Tamara, who had gone very still. She put her finger to her lips, quieting them.
Someone? Replied a light female voice.
You mean the minions of the enemy?
Who else? He means to start up the war again.
No broken Alkahest is going to save him once our Makar is trained and ready,
came the reply.
But if he's able to repair it, the tragedy of Verity Torres could repeat itself,
cautioned a third voice, this one a man's, sharp with nervousness.
Our Makar is young like she was. We need time. The Alkahest is too powerful for us to take an attempt to steal it lightly.
They're moving it to a more defensible location. The woman's voice again. They were fools to keep it on display in the first place.
Until we're sure it's secure, the safety of our Makar must be our highest priority,
the first speaker said. Aaron had gone still where he sat, the burbling water of the fountain loud in Call's ears.
I thought having a Makar around was supposed to make us safer, said the nervous voice. If we're busy guarding him, who's guarding us?
Call stood up, struck by the thought that they were about a second away from overhearing one of the mages say something bad about Aaron, something even worse than just speculating about the enemy's plans for killing him. Call wished he could tell Aaron that he was pretty sure the enemy of death hadn't tried to steal the Alkahest,
whatever that was,
and also wasn't currently planning anything worse than revenge on Jasper. Of course, he had no idea what Master Joseph was up to. So maybe the minions of the enemy of death were behind the attempted theft, which was less reassuring. Master Joseph had plenty of power on his own. He'd been managing without Constantine Madden for 13 years, however much he said he needed Call.
Come on,
Tamara said loudly, grabbing Aaron's arm and hauling him to his feet. She must have been thinking along the same lines as Call.
I'm starving. Let's go get something to eat.
Sure,
Aaron said, although Call could tell his heart wasn't in it. Nonetheless, he followed Call and Tamara to the buffet table and watched while Call piled 3 plates with towers of shrimp and scallops, sausages and cheese. People kept coming up to Aaron, congratulating him on his control of the Chaos Elementals, wanting to invite him to things or tell him a story about their involvement in the last war. Aaron was polite, nodding along with even the dullest anecdotes. Call made Tamara a cheese plate, mostly because he was sure that evil overlords didn't make other people cheese plates. Evil overlords didn't care if their friends were hungry. Tamara took the cheese plate, shrugged, and ate a dried apricot off it.
This is so boring, she whispered. I can't believe Aaron isn't dead from boredom.
We have to do something,
Call said, throwing a breaded shrimp up into the air and catching it in his mouth.
People like Aaron act all nice until suddenly they explode and banish some annoying geezer into the void.
That's not true,
Tamara said, rolling her eyes.
You might do that, but Aaron wouldn't.
Oh, yeah?
Call raised his eyebrows.
Take a good look at his face and say that again.
Tamara studied Aaron for a long moment. Aaron was trapped in conversation with a skinny old mage in a pink suit, and his eyes looked glazed.
Fine. I know where we can go.
She dumped the plate Call had made her and grabbed hold of Aaron's sleeve. He turned toward her in surprise and then shrugged helplessly at the adult talking to him as she dragged him away from the conversation and toward the house. Call abandoned his half-finished food on a stone banister and hurried after them. Tamara gave him a brilliant, crazy grin as they pulled Aaron inside, Havoc trotting behind.
Where are we going?
Aaron said.
Come on!
Tamara led them through the house until they reached a library lined with richly bound books. Mullioned windows, set with colored glass, let in sparkling beams of light, and deep red rugs covered the floor. Tamara crossed the room toward a massive fireplace. A stone urn stood at each side, carved out of multicolored agate. Each one had a word inscribed on it. Tamara took hold of the first one and twisted it around so that the word faced them. Prima. She moved to the second urn and twisted it until the second word faced them as well. Materia. Prima materia, Call knew, was an alchemical term. It meant the very first substance of the world, the substance that everything that wasn't chaos, earth, air, fire, water, metal, and souls came from. A sharp click sounded, and a section of the wall swung open onto a well-lit stone hallway.
Whoa! Call said.
He wasn't sure where he'd been expecting Tamara to take them. To her room, maybe, or to a quiet corner of the house. He hadn't expected a secret door.
When were you going to tell me about this? Aaron said, turning to Tamara. I've been living here for a month.
Tamara looked delighted at having kept a secret from him.
I'm not supposed to show anyone. You're lucky to be seeing it now. Makar?
Aaron stuck his tongue out at her. Tamara laughed and ducked into the hallway, reaching up to pull a torch down from the wall. It glowed a bright gold green and gave off a faint smell of sulfur. She set off down the corridor, pausing when she realized the boys weren't right on her heels. She snapped her fingers, her curls swinging.
Come on, she said. Move it, slowpokes.
They looked at each other, shrugged, and headed after her. As they walked, Havoc, huffing along after them, Call realized why the hallways were so narrow. They ran through the whole house like veins beside bone, so anyone in any of the public rooms could be spied upon. And at regular intervals there were small hatches that opened into what looked like air ducts, covered by ornate ironwork registers. Call opened one and peered down into the kitchen, where the staff were making up fresh pitchers of rosewater lemonade and placing tiny squares of tuna onto individual leaves that rested on large glass platters. He opened another and saw Alex and Tamara's sister cuddling on a sofette beside two brass statues of greyhounds. As he watched, Alex leaned in and kissed Kimaya.
What are you doing?
Tamara called back, under her breath.
Nothing.
Call slid the hatch closed. He went a little farther without succumbing to temptation, but paused when he heard Tamara's parents. As he paused, he heard Mrs. Rajavi say something about the guests at the party. Call knew he should follow Tamara, but he itched to eavesdrop. Aaron stopped and turned to look at Call. Call made a beckoning gesture, and Aaron and Tamara joined him at the hatch. Aaron slid it open quietly, with nimble fingers, and they all peered down.
We probably shouldn't,
Tamara began, but curiosity seemed to overcome her objections partway through her sentence. Call wondered how often she did this by herself, and what secrets she'd learned that way. Tamara's mother and father were standing in their study, a mahogany table between them. On it was a chess set, though Call didn't see the usual knights, rooks, and pawns. Instead, there were shapes he didn't recognize.
Anastasia, of course. Mr. Rajavi finished.
They'd come in the middle of his sentence.
Mrs. Rajavi nodded.
Of course.
She picked up an empty glass sitting on a silver tray, and, as they watched, it filled itself with some pale liquid.
I just wish there was a way not to invite the De Winters to these things,
That family believes that if they pretend long enough, it's still the glory days of magical enterprise. Maybe no one will notice how threadbare their clothing or their conversation has become. Thank goodness Tamara cooled on their son once school began.
Mr. Rajavi snorted. The De Winters still have friends on the assembly. It wouldn't do to put them off entirely.
Aaron looked disappointed that they were just gossiping, but Call was delighted. Tamara's parents were awesome, he decided. Anyone who wanted to keep Jasper out of a party was A-OK by him. Mrs. Rajavi made a face. They're clearly trying to throw their youngest son into the path of the Makar, probably hoping that if they become friends, some of the glory will rub off on him. And their family by extension.
From what Tamara has said, Jasper has failed to endear himself to Aaron, said Mr. Rajavi dryly.
I don't think you have anything to worry about, dear. Tamara is the one in Aaron's apprentice group, not Jasper.
And Colum Hunt, of course. Tamara's mother took a sip from her glass. What do you think of him?
He resembles his father.
Mr. Rajavi frowned.
Unfortunate about Alistair Hunt. He was a promising metal mage when he studied under Master Rufus.
Call froze. Aaron and Tamara were both looking at him with apprehensive expressions as Mr. Rajavi went on.
He was driven mad by the death of his wife in the Cold Massacre, they say. Putters about not using magic, wasting his life. Still, there's no reason not to extend a welcome to his son. Master Rufus must have seen something in him if he chose him as an apprentice.
Call felt Tamara's hand on his arm, pulling him away from the hatch. Aaron closed it behind them and they moved on down the hall, Call with his fingers tangled in Havoc's ruff for reassurance. His stomach felt a little hollow, and he was relieved when they came to a narrow door, which opened silently into what looked like another study. The gold-green light of the torch showed big, comfortable couches in the center of the room, a coffee table, and a desk. Along one wall was a bookshelf, but the tomes here weren't the beautifully bound and curated volumes Call had seen in the library. These looked older, dustier, and more worn. A few spines were ripped. Some were just manuscripts, tied with stained string. "What's this place for?" Call asked, as Havoc jumped up on one of the couches, circling a few times before dropping into a napping position.
"Secret meetings," Tamara said, her eyes sparkling. "My parents don't think I know about it, but I do. There are books about dangerous magical techniques in here, and all sorts of records dating back years. There used to be a time when mages were allowed to make money off magic, when they had huge businesses. Then they passed the enterprise laws. You weren't allowed to use your magic to make money in the normal world anymore. Some families lost everything."
Call wondered if that was what had happened to Jasper's family. He wondered if the Hunt family had made money like that too, or if his mother's family had. He realized he knew almost nothing about them.
"So how do mages make money?" Aaron asked, looking around the room, clearly thinking about the massive estate they were in and the party they'd just attended.
"They can either work for the assembly or they can get a regular job," Tamara said. "But if you had money from before, you could invest it."
Call wondered how Constantine Madden had made his money, but then figured he probably hadn't thought the enterprise laws applied to him once he went to war against the other mages, which brought Call right back around to the reason he'd come to Tamara's in the first place.
"Do you think any of the people at the party are headed back to the Magisterium?" Call asked. "Maybe I could get a ride with one of them."
"A ride? To the Magisterium? But no one's even there," Aaron said.
"Someone's got to be there," said Call, "and I've got to stay somewhere. I can't go home."
"Don't be ridiculous," Tamara said. "You can stay here until school starts. We can swim in the pool and practice magic. I already worked it out with my parents. We set up a spare room for you and everything."
Call reached over to pat Havoc's head. The wolf didn't open his eyes.
You don't think your parents mind?
They'd all heard her parents talking about him after all. Tamara shook her head.
They're happy to have you,
she said in a voice that made it clear they welcomed Call for good reasons and less good reasons. But it was somewhere to stay, and they hadn't said anything bad about him, not really. They'd said Master Rufus must have chosen him for a reason.
You could call Alistair, Aaron said, so he won't worry. I mean, even if he doesn't want you to go back to the Magisterium, he's got to want to know you're safe.
Yeah, Call said, thinking of his father slumped against the wall of the storage room, wondering how dedicated he was to chasing after Call and killing him.
Maybe tomorrow, after we find out more dirt on Jasper, and eat all the food at the buffet, and swim in the pool, and we can get some magic practice in, said Aaron with a grin. Master Rufus won't know what hit him. We'll be through the second gate before everyone else.
As long as it's before Jasper, said Call. Tamara laughed. Havoc rolled onto his back, snoring gently. Chapter 5. Spending time at the Gables gave Call a new appreciation for what it was like to be rich. A bell woke him in the morning for breakfast, which was eaten in a big sunny room overlooking the garden. Though Tamara's parents ate simple breakfasts of bread and yogurt, that didn't stop them from putting on an impressive spread for their guests. There was fresh squeezed juice on the table, and hot food like eggs and toast instead of dry cereal and milk. There was butter in creamy little pats instead of a crumb-encrusted brick that got brought out meal after meal. Havoc had his own bowls with chopped meat in them, although he wasn't allowed to sleep in the house. He slept in the stables on fresh hay and made the horses nervous. Call had a hard time believing he was staying at a place where there was a stable with horses out back. There were clothes, too, bought in Call's size from a department store and ironed before being hung in the wardrobe in Call's room, white shirts, jeans, swim trunks. Tamara must have grown up like this. She talked to the butler and the housekeeper with an easy familiarity. She called for iced tea by the pool and dropped towels on the grass, and left them, certain someone would come and pick them up. Tamara's parents had even been willing to tell Alistair that Call was on a trip with them, and they'd bring him directly to the Magisterium once they got back. Mrs. Rajavi reported that Alistair had sounded perfectly pleasant on the phone and wanted Call to have a good time. Call didn't actually think that Alistair had been happy to get the call, but the Rajavis were powerful enough that he didn't think Alistair would come after him so long as he was in their care. And once he was at the Magisterium, he'd definitely be safe. He wasn't sure what he'd do at the end of the school year, but that was far enough in the future that he didn't need to worry about it. Despite Call's uneasiness about his father, he let the days slip by in long, sunshine-filled hours of swimming and lying on the grass and eating ice cream. He'd been self-conscious the first time he'd come out to the seashell-shaped pool in his trunks, realizing Aaron and Tamara had never seen his bare legs before. His left was thinner than his other leg, and covered in scars that had faded over the years from angry red to light pink. They weren't so bad, he'd thought anxiously, sitting and looking at them in his room. Still, they weren't anything he liked to show people. Neither of them had seemed to notice, though. They'd just laughed and splashed him, and pretty soon Call was sitting out on the lawn with them and Alex and Kimaya, soaking up the sun and drinking iced mint tea with sugar. He was actually sort of getting a tan, which hardly ever happened. Not that that was unexpected, considering that he went to school underground. Sometimes Aaron would play tennis with Alex whenever Alex could be pried away from Kimaya's face. Magical tennis
seemed a lot like regular tennis to Cole, except that every time the ball went wide, Alex summoned it back with a snap of his fingers. Though they'd promised to practice magic, they didn't get a lot of practicing in. Once or twice they went out beside the house and called up fire, shaping it into burning orbs that could be safely handled, or used earth magic to pull iron filaments up out of the dirt. Once, they practiced heaving big stones out of the ground, but when one flew perilously close to Aaron's head, Mrs. Rajavi came out and scolded them for endangering the Makar. Tamara just rolled her eyes. One afternoon, late, when the hazy air was full of droning bees, Cole was walking from the breakfast room toward the staircase and overheard Mr. Rajavi speaking in one of the parlors. His voice was low, but as Cole crept forward, he heard him cut off by an exclamation from Alex. Alex wasn't yelling, but the rage in his voice carried.
"What exactly are you trying to say, sir?"
Cole edged closer, not sure what kind of conversation he was eavesdropping on. He told himself that he was doing it in case it turned out they were talking about Aaron, but in fact, he was more worried they'd discovered something about him. Could Alistair have said something else to Mrs. Rajavi on the phone, something she hadn't told Cole? The magical world already thought Alistair was nuts, but whatever he said about Cole would have the advantage of being true. "We've enjoyed having you as our guest," Mrs. Rajavi was saying, "but Kimaya is still young, and we think you're both moving too fast."
"We're just asking you to take a break for the school year," Mr. Rajavi said.
Cole let out a breath. They weren't talking about Aaron or Cole or anything important. Just dating.
"And this doesn't have anything to do with the fact that my stepmother opposed your last assembly proposal, right?"
Alex sounded furious. Cole decided that maybe it was important after all.
"Watch yourself," Mr. Rajavi said. "Remember what I told you about respect."
"What about respecting what your daughter wants?"
Alex asked, his voice rising.
"Kimaya, tell him."
"I can't believe this is happening," Kimaya said. "I just want everyone to stop yelling at one another."
After many years of arguing with his own father, culminating in the terrible argument that he couldn't even think about without feeling sick to his stomach, Cole knew this wasn't going anywhere good. Taking a deep breath, he pushed open the door to the room and looked at the four of them with the most confused expression he could muster.
"Oh, hey," Cole said. "I'm sorry. This house is so big that I keep getting turned around."
"Call 'em," Mrs. Rajavi said, forcing a smile. Kimaya looked ready to cry. Alex looked ready to hit someone. Cole recognized the expression.
"Oh, hey, Alex,"
Cole said, trying to think of a good reason to drag him out of there before he did something he regretted.
"Can you come with me for a second? Aaron wanted to, ask you something."
Alex turned that furious expression on Cole, and for a moment, Cole wasn't sure he'd made the right decision. But then Alex nodded and said,
"Sure." "I'm glad we had this talk," Mr. Rajavi told him.
"Me too,"
Alex said between gritted teeth. Then he walked out, forcing Cole to scramble to catch up. Alex stalked out onto the lawn, heading toward the stone fountain. When he got to it, he kicked it hard and yelled something Alistair had forbidden Cole to ever utter.
"I'm sorry," Cole said.
In the distance, he could see Aaron and Tamara throwing sticks to Havoc on one of the far lawns. Fortunately, they were out of earshot.
"Aaron doesn't really want to see me, does he?" said Alex.
"Nope," said Cole. "Sorry again."
"So why'd you pull me out of there?"
Alex didn't look angry now, just curious.
"Nothing good was going to happen," Cole said firmly. "That wasn't the kind of fight that anybody wins."
"Maybe,"
Alex said slowly.
"They just...
They make me so angry. They're all about putting on a show, like they're perfect and everyone else is less.
Call frowned.
What do you mean?
Alex cut a glance toward Aaron and lowered his voice even further.
Nothing. I don't mean anything at all.
Alex clearly thought that Call couldn't understand. It would be useless to explain that it might seem like Tamara's parents liked him, but they wouldn't if they knew the truth. They might not even like Aaron, if he wasn't the Makar. But Alex would never believe that a little kid like Call had big enough secrets to matter to anyone, even if he did. It was only a few days later that Call had to pack up his new clothes and get ready to head back to school. He stuffed himself with sausages and eggs at breakfast, knowing it was going to be a while before he saw non-lichen-based food again. Aaron and Tamara were already wearing their green second-year magisterium uniforms, while Alex and Kimaya were in fourth-year white and glowering at each other. Call sat there in his jeans and t-shirt, feeling very out of place. Alex gave Call a pointed look as if to say, "You'll never be good enough for them either." Mr. Rajavi looked at his watch.
"Time to go," he said. Call?
Yeah?
Call turned toward Tamara's father.
Take care of yourself.
There was something in his voice that made Call unsure if the words were kindly meant, but maybe he was just letting Alex get to him. Everyone headed for the foyer where Stebbins, his bald head gleaming, was assembling their bags. Aaron and Call both had new duffels, while Tamara and Kimaya had matching sets of snakeskin luggage. Alex had a suitcase with his initials, ATS, on it. He picked it up and headed for the door. Once outside, Alex started down the driveway. Call realized with a jolt that a white Mercedes was waiting at the end of the drive, its motor running. Alex's stepmother had come. Kimaya gave a little gasp. Stebbins looked wistful.
"Nice car," Call said.
"Shut up,"
Tamara muttered.
"Just because you're obsessed with cars."
She gave Stebbins an odd warning look, which Call didn't have a chance to parse. Too many other things were happening at once. Kimaya was chasing after Alex, oblivious to the fact that everyone was now gawking at the two of them.
"What's wrong?"
she asked when she caught up to him.
"I thought you were going to ride with us on the bus."
He stopped in the middle of the drive and turned on her.
"I'm keeping my distance, just like your dad wanted. Anastasia is taking me to the magisterium. Summer's over. We're done."
"Alex, don't be like this," she said, looking stunned by his anger. "We could talk about it."
"We've talked enough."
He sounded as if he were choking on hurt.
"You should have stuck up for me. You should have stuck up for us,"
he told her, hoisting his bag up on his shoulder.
"But you didn't."
He spun away, stalking off down the driveway.
"Alex!"
Kimaya shouted, but he didn't respond. He reached the Mercedes and climbed inside. It sped away, sending up a cloud of dust.
"Kimaya!"
Tamara started to run toward her sister, but her mother caught her by the wrist.
"Give her a moment," she said.
"She probably wants to be left alone." Mrs. Rajavi's gaze was bright and hard. Call decided he had never been so uncomfortable in his life. He kept remembering Alex saying,
"Kimaya, tell them!"
And Kimaya not saying what he'd obviously wanted her to say. She had to be afraid of her parents. Call wasn't sure he blamed her. After a few minutes, a yellow school bus pulled through the gates of the Gables. Kimaya came back into the house, wiping her eyes against her sleeve and sniffing brokenly. She grabbed her luggage without looking at anyone. When her mother reached out to put a hand on her shoulder, Kimaya shrugged it off. Call knelt down to unzip his bag, to make sure he had everything.
He zipped it back up, but not before Mrs. Rajavi had caught sight of his knife, glinting atop his clothes.
"Is that Semiramis?"
she asked. Call nodded, zipping the bag up hastily.
"It was my mother's. I know. I remember when she made it. She was a very skilled metal mage."
Tamara's mother cocked her head to the side.
"Semiramis is named for an Assyrian queen."